This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Public television found itself in a similar place as public radio during the last national election cycle, as a media outlet that was covering both politics and in the political crosshairs. Some legislators believed PBS and NPR represented easy targets for federal budget cuts. But as has been the case in the past, fans and viewers mounted an impassioned defense of the network and its member stations. Still, PBS faces challenges in an increasingly fractious media age. Viewers aren't just tuning to a myriad of cable networks, but also to on-demand viewing sources, which is why you can now watch many public TV shows on Netflix and Amazon and Roku. Paula Kerger was in Milwaukee yesterday to talk about the state of public television. She's president and CEO of PBS, and she sat down with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke and talked first about what the network's greatest assets are today.
Our greatest asset is always the content. And as I look across the media landscape and try to envision a future for public media, I always stay focused on what has been a constant through our entire history, which is what are the areas of market failure that commercial media is, for whatever reason, not able to fulfill? That's why we were created to begin with, which seemed very obvious when there were a couple networks and maybe an independent channel or two, and you had to physically get up from your couch to turn the channel. But, you know, flash forward now, 800 channels later, 56% of television primetime is reality shows, and we find ourselves again looking at market failure in what seems like some places that perhaps commercial television could have fulfilled, and actually for a time perhaps did fulfill. So this year, where our audiences are up by 7%, and I think because we've tried to stay true to that constant of quality content that entertains, of course, but also educates and inspires when we really hit our mark.
I suspect if you ask the average person, perhaps walking down Wisconsin Avenue right now, the first thing that comes to mind in the context of public television, they might say Downton Abbey, they might say Sesame Street. That's obviously not the full picture, but what can PBS do to leverage the considerable success that those two very different shows have had and continue to have?
So let's start with Sesame Street. I think when Sesame Street was created, it really did change the way that people thought about television and its potential as an educator, not just as my father used to refer to it as the idiot box, but a place where you could use the technology to bring a true curriculum into the home. And we focus our efforts principally on children under the age of five. The programs that we build are focused on children who may live in homes without computers or books, but that have access to television, which can help to provide some of the core curriculum that will be important for them in school, so basic literacy, some STEM, some of the social-emotional skills that are important for success. So I think that has that coupled with the fact that we work with extraordinarily talented producers that create exciting and compelling content for kids, because if they don't want to watch, they can turn the channel. So that is a big piece of what we do, and the partners that we're able to work with in public broadcasting that create programs like Curious George, which is the number one show on television for children, not just on public television, demonstrates that education and entertainment don't have to be separate activities. They can be meshed together. And we have a lot of children that are coming to us on television, but also on mobile devices and online. We're averaging close to 200 million of children's content alone, 200 million streams, that is, of children's content a month. So a lot of kids come to us there. In terms of Downton Abbey, that is an unbelievable phenomenon. And loyal audiences, January 5th, they will come back. What we've attempted to do with Downton Abbey is, for those that love public broadcasting and love the kind of work that we do on Sunday nights, it's very much a part of that whole effort. But for people that are discovering Downton Abbey for the first time and perhaps discovering public television in a way that they haven't experienced in a number of years, it is an opportunity to bring people in and introduce them to other programs. So Mr. Selfridge, which we announced 2 years ago, Called the Midwife, which was also successful in the UK, Last Tango in Halifax. We have a number of dramas that have brought in new audience. But also, it's given us a chance to really promote other work that we do that we think is of interest to a wider audience. Last week we just did the JFK documentary from American Experience, and I believe that people that came in via Downton Abbey are sampling other things.
NPR and PBS are obviously two very different entities, but let me just make a comparison. If you go to npr.org right now, the page is geared to the latest breaking news and features from around the country, around the world. PBS.org is a much different website. There are highlights from individual shows, so what's coming up this evening, some localized content. What is the digital future of PBS? And is it hooked to PBS.org, or is it really about these other places, the Netflix and Amazon and other means of distribution?
I think it's all of the above. Obviously, the NPR site is very focused on news. It's the core of public radio, but there's also cultural programs, obviously, there. And for PBS, we've thought about the online experience in a couple different ways. One is the video player that has both local as well as national content. And one of the challenges that we've been working on navigating, whether it's through the web presence or whether it's through some of these other over-the-top type of distribution, such as Roku or Apple, which was just announced today, is the opportunity to connect people not just to the national content, not just to Ken Burns and others, but also to the local station content. And so we're trying to make sure that wherever public television content is showcased, it's showcased where the local content can sit alongside the national content, and that for us has been one of the biggest priorities over the last couple of years working with some of our stations, is figuring out what that experience can be and sort of looking forward, anticipating that there are a lot of people that are still watching television in the way that we've watched television for years, sitting in the living room or sitting in the family room or around the kitchen, watching a schedule that has been organized for them. But there's an increasing audience that is coming to us in other places, and we want to be in all of those destinations, and we want our local stations there alongside of us.
Earlier this year, I think you pointed to a disconnect between stations and PBS itself as maybe the biggest issue confronting the system. Is that what you're getting at there? Is it a question of making the case that both member stations and the network itself are equally important?
What I was commenting on, and you're referencing a speech that I made at our annual meeting, is that I think too often it's easy to pointed differences. Our stations are all very different. They're all independent. So we're not a network, and I think most people assume that somehow we're like ABC or NBC and there's some great entity at the top and the stations all fall underneath. We're the reverse model. Same with radio. Every radio station, TV station are all independent. They're all locally owned and operated, which is critically important in this era where, in the commercial side, roughly five companies control everything that we read and watch and listen to. So the public stations being anchored in local communities are important. One can take that too far and believe that every community is completely different from another and that fierce local autonomy should drive everything. And I think what has worked in both public television and public radio is this idea that the independence of the local station is profoundly important. People that control the station, that look at the programming, that do the reporting, all live in the community. They understand the issues. But being able to do that work and at the same time take advantage of the scale that stations coming together in support of an NPR, coming together in support of a PBS can do collectively is what makes us different and unique. And so I think that what I was trying to encourage our stations to recognize is that our fate and our future is very much tied in our ability to try to work through all of this together. So as we look at a media environment that could become very fractionalized, there is a compelling argument that we need to, as a system, look across the table and figure out how we form this common cause in navigating what is a fairly complex environment.
While you're in Milwaukee, you're also announcing the news that PBS will air the Milwaukee Public Television and Milwaukee Ballet production of Peter Pan. Can you put that news in the context of PBS's maybe the relationship with member stations and also the ongoing commitment to things like arts coverage?
So when I was first in this job, one of the very early visits that I made to public television stations was to Milwaukee. I was really interested in seeing the work that was underway here. And Ellis Bromberg, who is the president of the station, had talked to me about the fact that he was very interested in some ideas that I had begun to advance about deepening public television's commitment to the arts, and he was interested in doing the same here in Milwaukee. I met with a group of arts leaders here, and we talked about the potential of what we could be doing at the national level as well as what MPTV could be doing here locally. And he called us one day and said that there was an extraordinary production out of the Milwaukee Ballet of Peter Pan, and would we be interested in taking a look? We were. He was absolutely right. It's an extraordinary production, and we felt that it was the kind of program that a national audience would treasure as much as people have here in Milwaukee.
There's been a lot made about things like arts and music programming disappearing from many schools as budgets become tighter. Does this make what PBS does in terms of arts and music more important within its overall mission?
I grew up seeing programs like The Ed Sullivan Show, where you had the opportunity to see an opera singer or a dancer or Popo Gigio or the Beatles, and that kind of programming really doesn't exist anymore. And I think that as I thought about this, and then as the economic downturn in the country happened, I saw arts organizations struggling. And part of the issue for many arts organizations is marketing dollars were often early dollars to be cut. And if you can't put your art form in front of the public, how do you encourage people in, particularly if that experience is not available in schools? Considering that, I challenged our colleagues in public broadcasting to really double down, both at the local level as well as nationally, to explore ways that we could give wider exposure to the arts. I think a production like Peter Pan is similar to other types of productions that not only get people interested in ballet, but Peter Pan is very accessible to kids. So that's why I was really excited that we'd have an opportunity to showcase it.
Paula Kerger, thank you so much, and come back and see us in Milwaukee again soon.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Paula Kerger is president and CEO of PBS. She spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke yesterday as she was in Milwaukee for an event sponsored by Milwaukee Public Television. Milwaukee gets some positive recognition from the Department of Energy. Our environmental reporter has the story when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.